Sure is. And we're going to take your phone calls with Hazel Courtney right now on Coast to Coast AM. Hazel, do you think we all have the capability of creating miracles?
Absolutely, I do. It's our birthright. And once people understand that and decide to, you know, start looking into all this stuff, then, you know, yes, we're absolutely all capable of miracles. I've got absolutely no doubt about it.
All right, great. Let's go to some of the calls. Jody is in Seattle, Washington, and you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jody.
Hi, George. Well, first of all, it's the first time I ever called. I've been listening for years back when Art Bell started back in Virginia, and now I'm in Seattle. But God bless you what you do, man.
Glad you got through. Go ahead.
And she was talking that, you know, if we're good, it says right there in the Bible, if we're going to be sons of God, then we'll have the same power, right, as Jesus. We're here to learn to get godly character. And I was wondering, I could suggest a guest for you. Remember my church, the Philadelphia Church of God? You ever heard of it?
Yep, sure have. David?
And all the readings, I've got Crohn's disease since 2006, just got diagnosed. So I had plenty of time, and thank you for turning me on to Zachariah Sitchin. He was right. They created us, but if you read a certain part in there, it says that even Anunnaki said there was a creator of all things, a God for their good. They were gods to us, but they've got a God, too. There is a creator. I just wonder, you should check into some of his, it comes from Herbert Armstrong's writing, and you ought to check into it, thekeyofdavid.com. It makes a lot of sense if you look up and read about it. But what they say, all the people worried about the end times, I see until the Jews have the sacrifice and desecrate the temple, like it says in Daniel and Revelations, I don't think we have to worry, but I do believe we're in end times. And here lately, I've had a lot of, it's like something broadcasting, keeping me on edge, like you talk about. I really believe that. But, hello?
Okay, great. That's a good comment. We'll check into that individual, too, as well. Let's go to Mike in Lawrence, Kansas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mike.
I've kind of struggled with my spirituality over the years, and I was agnostic forever, and I'm starting to align a little bit with Buddhism and have been studying a lot. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Four Noble Truths. I'm not going to go real deep into it, but the first two is life means suffering. That's the first one. And then the second one is the origin of suffering is attachment. And then it goes into, you know, our minds are attached to impermanent things, you know, and all these transient things instead of things that lack that have permanence and whatnot. And, you know, that's just everything that we perceive is impermanent. You know, so I'm wondering if attachment is what we're trying to transcend with this concept, how do things like love play into that? Wouldn't love be an attachment?
Well, I don't know, but Hazel, you have talked about love.
I think that love is everything. I mean, if we could all learn to be more forgiving, and if we can let go of guilt, that the world would be a better place, and I really do not believe that life means suffering. We might be divine spirits having a physical journey, but, you know, we can also have some fun along the path. And so, yes, I believe that attachment to stuff and to things, a lot of people equate happiness with how much money they've got in the bank or how much stuff they own. But as you say, they are very impermanent things. But God, or what we think of as being God, is ever-present, is eternal and everlasting. And so once we realize that we are all eternal and everlasting, yes, this world is impermanent, but we could make this earth heaven on earth if we would just behave differently to each other. You know, there's all these wonderful phrases, you know, treat people as you would like to be treated yourself. like what's going on now in Libya or Bahrain, and there's so much unhappiness in the world, but we could, all of us, make it a happier place if we could practice more forgiveness, if we could let go of guilt, and if we could just be kinder to each other. And just doing that adds, because every thought that you have contributes to the whole which we exist inside of. So the more positive thoughts we can send out to the whole, the more actions, positive actions that we can take, add to the whole, and what we give out is what we'll get back.
Do you sense
so love that? Love is everything.
Hazel, do you sense that more and more people are tense these days?
More and more people are?
Are tense, uptight.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, society, we have become a sort of 24/7 society. And there's so much, like, you know, with the tsunami in Japan, everybody's starting to think, oh, my God, you know, 2012, it's all going to come to an end or whatever. It is not. Yes, there is a huge tenseness, but the more we can find peace within ourselves, the more people that can meditate, the more people that can chant spiritual practices, be kind to each other, coherence is catching. So the more that we can find peace in ourselves, this peace will spread to others. It'll attach to our country grid, our community grid, our world grid. And then remember, whatever the whole consists of, the collective consciousness, whatever you want to call it, that is what will bounce back to us. So I would say to people, please stop adding fear to the whole that you exist inside of. Find peace. Always begin with the self. And in that way, slowly but surely, we will change and we will become less tense and less fearful.
Do we all need a near-death experience like you did in order to
Absolutely not.
See this?
I wouldn't want anyone to have to go through what I went through. I'm very, very lucky, actually, to have survived the experience. I would far more encourage people to grow in coherence or to grow spiritually slowly and in a controlled way. And if people choose to meditate in groups, this is even better because it amplifies the effect. So I would just say, I'm not trying to impose thoughts or beliefs or a dogma onto anyone. We've got enough people doing that. I always say to people, you have to find your own truth. But as you awaken this thalamus within the center of your brain and you start to become more psychic, more intuitive, you learn to trust your gut instinct more. You learn to be more discerning. And when you're truly online to the universal field of intelligence that does underlie all of life, then you are far more likely to be in the right place at the right time. You don't become so stressed. You don't sweat the small stuff anymore. And therefore, your life begins to flow more and more coincidences, more synchronicities come into your life. So I would say, as much as you can, I mean, it's almost impossible in these days to let fear go all the time.
Right.
But the more you can be non-judgmental and stay in what I call neutral and just observe the stuff that's going on, but not add fear to the whole, the sooner our lives, all of our lives, can improve. Because 2012 is about mind, body, and spirit becoming as one.
Let's go to Kansas City, Missouri. Thomas is with us. Go ahead, Thomas.
Good evening. How are you folks doing tonight?
We are fine. Hazel, are you well?
I'm great, Thomas. Thank you.
You know, I just am amazed with what you've been talking about this evening, Hazel. It's fantastic. I wanted to bring up the idea that I think that consciousness itself is a quantum processes that Dr. Stuart Hameroff has worked with in Phoenix, Arizona, showing quite a bit of evidence about it. And if this is true, which I believe it is, then everything that you've been talking about us being connected, is absolutely correct. In the molecule of the neuron are dendrites, and within the dendrite are these pools of like oily substance where electrons rest on top and can communicate between themselves and what's interesting about that is that, you know, electrons are quantum particles.
Mm-hmm.
They can be both, a particle or a wave. So they can be distributed over vast areas. So an electron that I can identify, you know, here on the table in front of me, I could probably also identify the very same electron on the other side of the world as being the same electron, which I think is just amazing. But the thing is,
Thomas, you know that science has verified that all matter, you're absolutely right in what you're saying, all matter, tiny quantum particles which exist in a sea of potentiality, they don't come into being until they are first measured or observed. Now, when you take this concept to its ultimate conclusion, you are looking at life from your perspective now in America. I'm looking out at my beautiful garden here in Henley-on-Thames in England. So I'm not observing what you are observing. So when you take this to its ultimate conclusion, scientists now believe that something they theorize, that something, be it a parallel computer or whatever it is simultaneously observing everything all the time. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier, that in the simplest terms, this actually means that we exist inside something, but we're just not quite sure what it is yet. Like the guys at Fermilab, a huge government-funded research facility that have places all over the world, they have now found pixelation at the outer reaches of our universe. So they are beginning to wonder if we are like a holographic reality that's being pulsed from the outer reaches of our universe. But when I asked Bill Tiller, I said, Bill, I'm not a hologram. I said, if I kick a table, it really hurts. And he said, the current physics makes us real. Yes, our world is real. And I thought, well, thank God for that, because I really don't feel like a hologram. But the point is that the way technology is evolving, it really won't be very long. We can make holograms of light, but the technology is advancing that very shortly we will be able to make holograms of substance. And that really blew my mind.
If somebody is not aware, they're not in tune with any of this, how do they get that way, Hazel? What do they have to do?
Well, I mean, for me, it was going across the garden all those years ago when my next door neighbor, her husband died. I went across the garden to say hi to her, and I said I was very sorry her husband had died. And she wasn't crying, which really shocked me. And she said, oh, I can speak to my husband anytime I like. And I thought, oh, my God, this woman needs a psychiatrist and some Valium. And she gave me a book. It was a book of channeling. I stayed up all night. It was like a light went on in my head. So I think that if people, I mean, most people, as we've agreed, are not aware of any of this stuff. But I think that gradually and slowly, spiritual books will become bestsellers. We had The Secret. You've got people like Deepak Chopra who've sold millions and millions and millions of books. There's plenty of medical research to show that, say, regular meditation is not woo-woo. It balances hormones. It enables you to cope with stress far better. It helps you to sleep better. People who meditate are younger, physically, mentally. And so it's just a question of people becoming more aware of their physical bodies, looking after their bodies, and just becoming more interested in what's out there. And I think people with totally closed minds, real hard fundamentalists, then I don't think maybe we're ever, you know, you can only do what you can do. And so we're all links in a chain. And we can all do what we can, where and when we can, even if it's only making a neighbor a cup of tea today and smiling at someone and telling them that you love them. All those small acts of kindness all add to the positivity of the whole.
Let's go to Victoria, Virginia. We've got Kevin. He's been waiting. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how y'all doing tonight?
Well, thank you.
All right. I had an experience about 12 years ago where I was laying in the bed, and I had like a, I was in deep sleep, and I had a like a voltage go through my head, and it woke me dead up out my sleep, and I sat up in the bed. So I tried to go back to sleep. The same thing happened again. Okay. Between the two shocks, I had a dream to where I was in a future world, and this is a little sound crazy. I was in a future world. There were giant robots. It was me and this kid, and we were hiding. And these giant robots were looking for us, and right before he pulled a piece of metal back to get us, I woke up. Okay. Since then, I went through a many number of dreams to where I had a dream to where in the beginning I seen the earth, I seen a man of fire, red fire, a man of blue fire. They were holding hands and they were going around the earth. And then I seen other things like wars going on. And then in the third section, we were all at the supper table of Christ eating dinner.
Huh.
I know that sounds weird, but that's the way it happened.
Interesting dream indeed. Do you look at dreams at all, Hazel?
Well, I've spoken to Professor Travis about dreams, and he says that at night, when we are dreaming, the ancient parts of our brain, the reptilian part of our brain, becomes more active. And obviously, dreams can be triggered by a whole load of factors, such as what's going on in your life, your subconscious, and so on. It's a way of us dealing with our emotions. So sometimes our dreams don't make any sense. But if you recall, earlier on, I talked about that in between waking and sleeping and dreaming, our consciousness passes through this underlying field of intelligence where we can have access to all knowledge. We can therefore see potential futures because they are only potential futures. And we can see and experience all kinds of other realities. And so people sometimes think they're dreaming when they have these experiences, but in fact, they are accessing this underlying field of intelligence. But the trouble is when you wake up, it's discerning what was real and what wasn't.
All right. Well, you stay with us, Hazel. We're going to come back in just a moment and take final phone calls. Hazel's website, what's her name? HazelCourtney.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Her latest work is called Countdown to Coherence. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your final calls before open lines after that. Time for our traditional shout out. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, hello to you. Coast Insiders listening worldwide, hello to all of you. And XM Satellite Channel 165. And how about the various chat room and groups? The Coast to Coast Elite folks, hello there. Imaginative Worlds, Into Infinity, National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, the MySpace groups, Facebook, Twitter groups, Yahoo Chat, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group. How about AboveTopSecret.com, SoCal UFO Meetup Group, Hollywood Ghost Hunters, and our buddy in St. Louis, Greg the Cook. Stay out of the rain. And I'll be back in a moment with final calls with Hazel Courtney before open lines next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with our special guest tonight, Hazel Courtney. Hazel, where do you get your books? Where are they available?
They're available in America through good bookshops such as Barnes & Noble and Borders, and they're also available via Amazon.com.
Now, are you still doing reporting, or are you still continuing to write? What are you doing now?
Yeah, I give lectures in the UK. I just returned actually from America from launching the books in America. I do lots and lots of radio. I did some TV. So I don't write articles for the newspapers so much anymore because I'm so busy with the books, but I also write health books and occasionally I write articles, and people can like keep up to date with what I'm doing by logging onto my website.
Now, of all the people you've interviewed in your career, anybody stand out?
Oh, wow, they're all magical, amazing people. But the one who made me laugh, I think, the most was the theologian Dr. Michal Ledwith, who used to head up Maynooth College, which is a college for theology at the University of Ireland. And I remember being terribly excited about this eighth chakra that we talked about around about an hour ago. And he said to me, he said, you know, Hazel, he said, 40,000 children die of hunger every day. He said there are currently about 20 conflicts going on around the world. And he said, so when we can feed the whole of humanity and we're living in peace, he said, then let's start worrying about the eighth chakra. And so what he was saying is, we shouldn't sweat the small stuff so much on this spiritual journey. You know, practically, on a practical level, we have so many things that are not perfect about this world. So if we want them to be perfect, we have to be willing to take more actions to bring them into perfection. But Michal really helped me to understand the misinformation and the, I don't know, the misinterpretations from the holy books that goes back thousands of years. And he really, really helped me to understand that a lot of the things that we believe to be true and that we think are historical fact are not actually a fact at all. And he spent like 40 years researching ancient manuscripts. And he's just the most amazing man. I recommend anyone to log on to Michal Ledwith's site. He's an incredible man.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Bend, Oregon, we go. Richard's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi, Richard. Hi, George. Hazel, I appreciate you taking my call. Hazel, you made reference earlier in your show here tonight, and I can only think it was like an OBE, an out-of-body experience, where you said that you came out of your body and was able to view down below yourself and take a look at yourself. I am 57 years old, and I have had OBE, and I want to say guardian angel, since the age of 13 years. When I have these out-of-body experiences, and I'm always in conjunction with my guardian angel. My guardian angel is always, and every time, has shown me the next day. We have never gone 48 hours. It's always been 24 hours. In 2001, my parents passed away. I decided to travel to my birthplace, which was Fort Ord, California. I traveled halfway, spent the night in a motel. That night, I had an out-of-body experience with my guardian angel. My guardian angel took me to a restaurant where I had lunch the next day. Sure enough, I traveled the next day to Monterey, California, and the restaurant that I stopped at was exactly the one that I had seen the previous night before. My guardian angel, when I sat down at the table and was ready to order, and I love salads, she, and I want to say she because it took like a female form, put her finger over the salad. And without saying a word, I was able to experience what she was trying to tell me. Do not order the salad. So I changed my order and decided to go with the soup. Come to find out, after traveling back to Oregon, 11 days later, there was 27 people stricken with salmonella from the salads. And my guardian angel told me not to have this. So I want to say this is a near-death avoidance rather than a near-death experience.
That is a great story, Richard.
Is that different or what?
Well, you know what? Guardian angels are there. They save us. They jump in at any time. And that's exactly what happened to you. Let's go to Suzanne now in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Suzanne, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. It is a thrill to speak to you. I knew one day I'd be on the show.
Oh, I'm glad you made it.
And I call myself a light worker. And Hazel, thank you for keeping your promise to come back and let us know.
She came back.
I feel completely validated. I had a similar experience in 1987. And that's why I listened to Coast, because so many of the things that I foresaw during that 1 week period of being connected with super consciousness are talked about on the program. And I'm sure what I was seeing were potential futures, but I drove my family completely bonkers because I was seeing the future. I was experiencing like time travel. I was having extraterrestrial experiences. I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. And I produced a massive amount of artwork, and I was just like, blah, 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 because it was downloading so quickly. And I ended up in the hospital because my family was convinced I was completely nuts, except for one sister. And
she had the faith.
Yes. The one sister is actually a teacher now about coherence, so she and I have been on the same page. We had an agreement, we believe, to come in and get this message across about the time period that we are all experiencing.
That's a great story too, Suzanne. A number of people having these incredible experiences all around. But I guess, Hazel, we need more people to have them go through these things.
Well, I think that the story that I've just heard, a wonderful, incredible story, but of course, people need to keep in mind that the ultimate mind is everywhere all the time. So we all have access to these other levels of reality. But when you are exposed to them all in one go, like I was and like Susan was, you know, it can blow all your circuits. And so psychiatric wards are full of people that have gone through these breakthroughs, not necessarily breakdowns. They've broken through. The veils are lifting. And I think that the more of us that can perhaps go through these processes, integrate them, learn from them, and then help others to go through their process and not have to do it in a dramatic way.
I think you're right. Let's go to Jeff, truck driving Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I'll be there in several months at a major event. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, George, nice talk with you. You saved my life by keeping me awake running the road all night long.
Great.
Good. Hazel, you know, a lot of points you make are pretty good, but I've had lots of, I'm a master of out-of-body experiences. I've been doing it 30 years, and it's a whole other realm over there. There's good and there's bad, just like there is in our society. So a lot of people say I won't read any books on it because I feel it interrupts with my own train of thought. But George, if you want to get there, I can help you. You know,
I did it one time, Jeff, and that's it. I've been stymied.
Well, that's why I hear you're struggling with it, and it's really simple to do. And you got to remember one thing about OBEs is if we can do it, there's somebody that can do it better. I was in my heydays back in the early 2000s, and at one point I was just going for it all the time. I was having helicopters follow me around everywhere I went. I was in California at that time, and everybody thought I was joking. And then I started trying to call, like, universities, see if anybody was doing any research on this, and they go, well, you're probably doing drugs. And, no, I'm not doing drugs. And we've all smoked a little weed here and there, but the points when I would have it stronger is when, you know, the trick, George, is to lay down on a Sunday evening about 8 o'clock, take a nap, half hour, whatever. Don't go to bed exhausted, because if you go to bed exhausted, you won't get there because you just fall asleep.
Right.
So if you go to bed and the whole thing, the trick is in your eyes. You can't look through your eyes. You can't look for it. It's in your ears. When you start hearing your ears going, like putting your ear in a seashell.
Yeah.
And you're going to achieve it. But there's good people and there's bad people out there. So you got to be careful. And I've just recently, within the last 6 months, have discovered there's a blue light. So if you lay down, relax your optic nerves, and then you'll see there's a little white light that's in your eyes. Now, if you can slow that thing down and stop it, then you can go through that little light and you'll achieve out of body. But you can't look through your eyes. You have to relax your opticals. Use your ears. Go to the center of your head, down to your ear bones, and that's where it comes from.
Well, one of the best books out there is by Robert Monroe with his techniques, but I can't seem to do it. Now, you know, beyond this near-death experience that you had, Hazel, like Jeff, can you do out-of-body?
Not anymore. I mean, sometime I've done it once or twice in the last 10 years, but I agree with Jeff totally that once you go through the process, you can actually learn to do this. And yes, there are good and bad realities out there because there are millions, almost infinite numbers of frequencies. And just as we can now switch radio stations and hear your wonderful Coast to Coast, we can also switch on our TVs and whatever, and we can tune into multiple levels of realities. So as Jeff says, out there are many frequencies, and normally we are attracted to frequencies on which we resonate ourselves. So I believe, my personal belief is, for instance, say when we die, we will move to the frequency which suits our consciousness best at that moment in time. So out-of-body experiences are wonderful things, and I think that we can and we will all learn to do this at will, because the ultimate mind that we're part of is everywhere in all dimensions, in all times, and we can experience various parts of this mind by training our own minds here now.
All right, next up we go to Las Vegas. It's Jason's turn. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call. It's been a great show. Hazel, in reference to your neighbor that you spoke with, that you gave her encouragement for her husband that she lost, basically you said that she gave you a book and that helped you. You know, she basically said that she could talk to her husband anytime now, basically that he's closer. But I wanted to share an experience. In 97, my grandmother suffered a massive stroke and was paralyzed and unable to talk. And she lived in Detroit, and I lived in Colorado, and I was able to, have out-of-body experiences. But nevertheless, in 2006, she came and visited me in my room and told me that, you know, I'm tired of this, I'm crossing over. Basically told me a lot of things about my aunts and my family that ended up coming true. And she was like, in April, I will be going over, so tell your mom and your cousins to, you know, prepare themselves. So April 29th, she passed away. And it was just crazy that I could smell the perfume and everything, but yet that she never talked for 10 years, but I still was able to communicate that. And she passed it on with a time frame, like, I'm leaving in April. And on that day, April 29th, my son's birthday, she passed. And what do you have to say about that?
I think that when you leave your physical body, remember, you're no longer constrained by space-time. So spirit can be anywhere, and they can see the potential futures that are coming up in the near future. The far future is somewhat harder to see because it's not really crystallizing. But at a soul level, your grandmother's soul had decided to go at that time. So you were having what I would call a soul-to-soul, mind-to-mind communication. And so once the mind is outside of space-time, they can see potential futures. But the closer the event, the more likely it is to happen on that exact date. But quite often, mediums and spirits give you messages about what's coming up.
but they get the dates wrong because they're no longer constrained by our physical space-time. But you get lots and lots of incidents like this between people who have a very loving bond. You know, fathers, daughters, mothers, children. When you have a close family bond, these types of experiences are incredibly common.
Well, they sure are. Let's see if we can get Sharon in Wayne, Michigan. Hey, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi. 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 Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I'm at work, and boy, there's lots of noise. But I had a comment. Much of what Ms. Hazel is saying, by the way, greetings to you both, reminds me of a book on tape that I had many years ago named Conversations with God.
Yes, and, by Neil Donald Walsh.
Yeah, boy, I really enjoyed that, and I listened to it many times, and I resonate with that. I vibrate with that. The question that often stymies me, however, is being of African descent. I see things within, not only within my race, but the prejudice that we experience from people outside our race, and how that affects our experiences and our perception of life and oneself. And that causes me to ask the question, how then could we better, the word cope comes to mind, but address those situations within ourselves to overcome.
That's a good question, Sharon. I'm going to give you 30 seconds here, Hazel. We're almost out of time. Go ahead.
Okay, well, we are reincarnated over and over and over again. We've all been a black man, a white man, a Chinese man, a beggar man, a king. And so we're all experiencing being a part of God in a particular incarnation. And so you are just experiencing another perspective of who you are.
Well said, Hazel. Hazel's book, Countdown to Coherence. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back with Open Lines next on Coast to Coast AM.